I finally saw that we were on a hill overlooking a valley. It was absolutely breathtaking. Rolling hills were carpeted in emerald green, each plant blended with the next. Many of the trees were in flower, and the scene stretched as far as the eye could see. Here and there were small houses, and I asked if people lived in them. "Yes," replied Chan, "they are lovers of nature and feel at home in this environment. There are also towns and villages, just as there are on the earth plane. When you are fully ready for the final transition, this will be your home. Come, let us walk, we have the time." "Speaking of time," I said, "can you tell me how long I have been in my new world? I have lost all track of time." "I'm not complaining, of course, because it's nice not to be governed by a clock. In one way I'm enjoying myself, but I still miss my parents." "I knew you would ask about this," he said. "I have already calculated your time here. You've been here 22 Earth months, give or take a day." "But that's impossible," I said. "It seems as if I arrived only last week." "Of course, you have lost all sense of time," he said. "The reason is that you are vibrating at a much higher rate. Your days are made up of things that give you the most spiritual satisfaction, not the labors of the earth plane which can suck away your internal life force. Time as you know it is of no importance to spirit. Time and space are earth's limitation. Wherever you are, you can always be as near to me as you are now." A thought sent in any direction speeds in a flash to its destination. "Now, do not look back. Instead think in the living present, not in the past or the future. There is no tomorrow because, when it comes, it is today. Today only is ours. Thoughts of the past fog your mind and create a sense of depression. Do not let such thoughts dim today's light. Now, let us walk on." There were pine trees on either side where we walked which filled the nostrils with a heavenly scent. The grass was so beautiful that I hesitated to step on it. We descended into the valley. As we did, I became even more aware of the grass because it was covered with all manner of wild flowers that are only seasonal on the earth. The most striking were wild poppies which were dotted here and there, creating the illusion of miniature suns reflecting in a green sea. Slowly the colors blurred. I knew this meant it was time to leave, but I could not wait to live here permanently. Chan smiled and asked if I was ready to leave. Once again we were on the move and quickly appeared at the same spot by the pool. It was as though we had never left. Only my cherished memory of the visit remained. "I told you it would be a surprise," he said. "Eventually you will live there. Until then, you must work to earn the right to live there. What you have seen is only the icing on the cake, not the cake itself. As one climbs the ladder of progress, the planes become more refined. You have already noticed this on your visit to the fifth plane. Although it may be unconscious, the calling to all souls is to come higher. From now on, let it fill your consciousness. Strive ever towards the call because it's for your benefit as you have seen today. We are going to visit the earth plane next. I have some work to do and would like your help. In return you will gain experience. When we have finished, we shall visit your old home." For I was delighted to be given something to do, and the thought of seeing my parents made me even happier. Chan approached and asked, "Are you ready?" I took his arm, and we soon appeared in a place reminiscent of a battlefield. We walked for some time until we came to a seemingly deserted town. We entered the town square where several people stood talking. Most of these were higher astrals like Chan. "What's going on?" I asked. We walked for some time until we came to a seemingly deserted town. "There has been an intrusion from the second plane," he said. "It is only a minor one, but we must turn them back. Otherwise, the trickle will become a flood, and all, out war will be declared. We are here to discuss tactics." We walked over to where the others stood. One man seemed to be the spokesman. He was not very big and looked unimportant. Had he not been wearing a monk's cowl, you would not have looked twice at him. He began to speak, and, even from where I was standing, I sensed his willpower. "My brothers," he said, "I am pleased to work with you again. I have called you together because there is work to be done. A dozen or so newly slain are in these ruins. They are held by their lower emotions and fed by evil souls who will use them in the climb out of their own dark hell. You must take care because these dark forces will use every trick to hold on to the Floof's souls. So stay alert at all times." The monk then paused for a moment before continuing. "I see we have some new helpers. I am pleased to welcome you. We need every assistance in these operations. As it is your first time in this work, you will come under my jurisdiction. The rest of you are well versed since we have worked together many times. Before we begin, let us pray. What has Chan got me into?" I wondered. "It doesn't seem too healthy around here." Chan patted me on the back and told me to listen to the prayer. It was very inspiring and helped me overcome my fear. The words infused us with the monk's love, charging our batteries for the coming fight. The group was split into twos, except for the newcomers. When the others had gone, there were four of us left. The monk walked over to us and introduced himself as Brother David. He spoke briefly about his work and how pleased he was to have us with him on this mission. It was time to go, and David led the way. We soon reached the part of the town held by the lower astrals. The buildings were in a state of decay, and the mist was very thick in places. It reminded me of the Earth's smog, you know, here one minute, gone the next. Occasionally I noticed shadowy figures leering at us from the cover of the buildings. We passed through the fog. David still led and projected a light, making it quite easy to follow. With every step I felt a greater strength of purpose. We soon stopped outside a building that resembled one of the CT drinking dens on Earth. The door was partly damaged, which gave me the opportunity to look in. There were six people inside. Some stood at the bar, others sat and played cards. My attention was drawn to one of the darkened corners. An overwhelming sense of evil crept over me. A huge black mass lurked in the shadows. I saw the evil of this mass but felt that the souls we had come to rescue could not. I turned to David and asked, "What is that?" I think in my heart I already knew. He pulled me away from the door and said, "You must take what I am going to tell you very seriously. The four souls we are here to rescue are being encouraged to debase themselves by two lower astrals. The evil one lurking in the corner draws on the negative energy to increase his power. When we enter, you must stay close by me. Do not leave my side for any reason." I didn't expect the evil one to be so close. There was very little time to be afraid because with one push of the door we were inside. The pungent smell of decaying flesh filled my lungs, a feeling of nausea swept over me. I wanted to run away as fast as I could, but I knew that I could not. We went directly to the souls who were in need of help. They looked around with surprise to see the five of us standing here. "What do you want here?" shouted one of the lower astrals. I looked towards the corner and saw the evil one trying to hide. If he showed himself now, the game would be over. It was up to the two lower astrals to hold us back. They were no match for Brother David. With a wave of his hand and an utterance, they fled. This seemed easy. On seeing what had happened to his minions, the evil one came into the fray. This was a different kettle of fish. He towered above us. What little light we had disappeared. I looked for the four we had come to help and saw them huddled under a table. I saw the fear in their eyes as they watched the appalling apparition come from the corner. Its face resembled something out of hell. "God," I thought, "help." The evil one must have read my thoughts. Its hideous mouth opened and spoke in a slurred manner, an obnoxious smell oozed from every word. It became unbearable to breathe as these words rolled from the evil one's filthy lips. "God. Damnation is yours. All that is mine, and I claim these souls as mine." Brother David immediately turned to us and commanded, "Think only of the light and don't be distracted from it. The evil one is trying to frighten you so he can feed on it for strength. David then turned his attention to the evil one, "In the name of the Most High, he who has cast you into the pit of your own desires, I claim these souls in his love. And by my will, I command you to go." I realized the battle was an intense struggle of wills between the forces of light and darkness. I concentrated on the light, and an immense surge of energy flowed through me. On seeing my three friends, I knew they too were experiencing this new, found surge of energy. The battle was equal. Neither gained ground until Chan and another astral entered the room. On seeing what was happening, they joined the fight. Their added willpower defeated the hideous thing, and it started to lose ground. "Curse you, curse you," it snorted as it disappeared. "You have not won, there will be others." "I am afraid it is right," said David. "There will always be others." A shimmer of light entered the room, which made it easier to see. The stench decreased steadily. My immediate concern was with the poor souls we had come to help. I walked over to the table and lifted it from the four who still cowered underneath. They looked pitiful, they were fast sinking into the trap set by the evil one. Their eyes had sunk into the sockets, leaving a gaunt expression on their faces. "Come, we're safe now," I encouraged. When my friends saw what I was doing, they came to help. I reached down and grasped the hand of one of the victims. The hand felt like a cold, wet fish. My immediate reaction was to pull away, but something inside me forbade this. "Come, you are to follow me," I commanded. We gathered the four of them and headed towards the town square. As we walked along, I thought about these poor souls and the scene we had just witnessed. How lucky I was to have been found by the captain and not to have ended in this place. We were the last to approach the town square where Brother David waited. The other groups had also been successful. We led our group into a square that had been formed by the other rescuers. Chan told us to stand guard. I was sure they had no willpower left. The fight had knocked it from them. David entered the square and spoke, "Now listen, we have come to help you escape from the evil that stalks souls such as yours. Some of you have already seen the evil that awaits you here. You are on a slippery path, my friends, one which will eventually lead you into hell. Mend your ways, or you will end up there. Do not turn your backs on this chance. You will not get another. If our help is not wanted, you may go with God's blessing." Two of the higher astrals stepped to one side. Only three who were held in the square came forward and moved quickly out of sight. The rest argued among themselves. The four we had helped convincingly described what they had witnessed. After much discussion, one of them stepped forward and spoke hesitantly, "We would like to come with you." Tears rolled down his bony features. "Please help, I don't want to go back to that nightmare." He fell on his knees and cried like a child. My heart went out to him because I felt he was deeply ashamed. Brother David bent down, took hold of his arm and helped him up. For several minutes he spoke to him in a voice full of compassion. Brother David then turned to the others and spoke to them as well. Everyone present felt his love and compassion as he spoke, "I am glad you have come to your senses. We shall now take you to a place where you will be helped." I sighed a silent thank you to God for being with us. Brother David turned to us, the helpers, and asked us to join hands, forming a chain around the souls in the middle of the square. He then raised his hand and made a gesture in the air. A light formed immediately above his head and spread over all of us. Cries rose from those inside our chain. But the cries died down as the light faded, revealing a hospital. We led them into the building and were met by a sister and some nurses. We were told to wait while Brother David spoke at some length with the hospital staff. The nurses then led away those we had brought with us. Before the last one turned the corner, he stopped and smiled, as though to say thanks. This was the last time I saw them. I made my way over to Brother David and asked, "What will happen to them now?" "They will be looked after," he replied, "until they are ready for education into the higher life." "If we cannot die again," I questioned, "why have we brought them to a hospital?" A logical question, he replied. You are quite right, we cannot die a second time. The experiences we have in life leave an impression on the unconscious mind. These impressions become reality here because our minds inflict the measure of our thoughts onto us. We are either sent into heights of rapture or into the pits of our own desires. The souls we just saved were in this type of pit. Their weak wills made them easy prey. We are not concerned with their bodies, their minds need healing. In this hospital they will be given rest, taught to overcome their negative thoughts and to face their responsibilities. Eventually they will make good citizens. We'd just finished our conversation when the sister reappeared and spoke to Brother David. We then left the hospital and moved on, soon arriving at a stream. The water glistened brightly. The grassy banks looked so inviting that I was more than grateful for a chance to rest when Brother David asked if we cared to sit. He remained standing. When the rest of us were seated, he addressed us on self-reliance. We cannot walk in Otho's path for him. Each individual must take every step of it himself. We may hold a guiding light for those whose eyes are open and surround them with spiritual strength. Neither a spirit nor a human being should attempt to control an Otho's mind or to compel him to act against his will. We should be co-workers, helping each other in the Christ spirit. We can inspire, aid and guide, but never compel. It is not right to say you do not trust your own strength, because that is what you must trust. The spirit permeates you individually, you are it. It is your spirit, and it is strong enough to rule your mind and every cell of your body. By not trusting it, you disown it. Any thought of doubt, any word of fear must be extinguished before it takes form or expression. Believe in your God within, and all power is yours. What a wonderful address, I thought. It took away any possible fear I had about my new work. Brother David thanked the higher astrals. He turned his attention to us. Again, I thank you for your help. Today each of you has shown courage and strength that surpassed our expectations. Your teachers were right to have put you forward for this work. I hope we will work together again. Until then, God bless you. Brother David made the sign of the cross, then started to shimmer and fade. His words still echoed in my ears. When he had gone, Chan came across to me and held out his hand. I took hold, and he pulled me to my feet. Not a word passed between us because no words were necessary. This was the first time I understood the full meaning of Chan's teachings. Chan broke the silence by saying, "You have lived up to my expectations." My thoughts flashed back to the time when Chan had spoken to me about the lower planes and how he thought I could work there with him. He had it all worked out, the crafty so, I thought. "Now, Jim, I can read your thoughts," he said with a smile. "I promised to take you to see your parents after our work was over, but any more strain would be too much just now. Instead, I suggest we go to the pool so that you can wash off the stench of the battle." Chan held my arm, and again we were away. We reappeared by the pool. The water shimmered before my eyes, inviting me to enter. I wasted very little time undressing and in so doing disturbed the pattern on the water formed by some overhanging branches. Chan declined the invitation to join me and sat under one of the trees. For some time I soaked up the energy which the water gave freely. I was pleased with the way I had conducted myself in the fight and felt lucky to have Chan as my teacher. I felt much better now and decided to dress. I walked to where I had laid my clothes and was astonished to find them gone. In their place, a handsome robe of many colors was neatly laid out. "This must be Chan's doing," I thought, and turned towards the tree where he was sitting. "What's all this about then?" I shouted and picked up the robe. "Put it on," he replied, "that's a good fellow. We do not want people talking about you." I looked down at myself, flushed with embarrassment, and quickly put on the robe. It fitted beautifully and felt extremely comfortable over my shoulders. There was also a pair of funny, looking shoes which I slipped on. If my friends could only see me now, they would think I was going to a fancy dress party. Chan beckoned me to sit next to him. I walked carefully to the chair he had materialized. I had to walk carefully in the new shoes, otherwise, I would have fallen over. Even though I was dead, I still felt pain as I had not yet learned to control that side of my mind. I stood in front of Chan and asked, "What do you think?" "You look exquisite," he said, "just like an emperor from my period. Now come and sit down. I will explain why I have changed your clothes." When I had made myself comfortable, Chan continued, "The most important part of my teachings so far has been the creative principle of thought. You know, from your experience in the recent battle, that thoughts, good or I will, can be reflected back onto oneself. This has happened to you. Your emotional thoughts induced by the conflict of battle have affected your mental aura. It will be necessary to cleanse your emotional field every time you work in this way. As yet I have not taught you how to do this, but I did the next best thing by suggesting you bathe. In this way the magnetic force of the water has automatically cleansed not only your body, but your magnetic aura as well. As your thoughts gathered momentum in battle, they not only affected your mental aura but also your bodily one. All that your body has contacted, such as your clothes, has held onto your vibrations either good or I will. It will be necessary to cleanse not only the mental aura but your clothes as well. If you think back to the first time you bathed here, you will remember you also put on new clothes." "Oh yes, I remember," I said, "you took away my uniform." "That is quite correct," he replied. I explained why at the time. "This time I took it upon myself to give you new ones. The clothes I have furnished are a present from me. I do not expect you to wear them all the time. When we leave, I will materialize Western clothes for you. I must apologize to you. You were to attend an armistice party, instead I got permission for you to work with me. It will not be long before you move out of your billet because your adjustment period is nearly over. You have earned the right to move to a higher plane. This explains why we visited the fifth plane. I also needed an opportunity to introduce you to the work for which we thought you were most suited. There are souls who would like to work with us in these operations, but they do not have the right mental outlook and lack the necessary willpower. You possess these two necessary qualities as you have already demonstrated. The rest I am working on. Now let me explain something about the aura to you. You have noticed that you cannot lie here because your whole life can be read by someone capable of reading an author's pattern of life. Yours was read when you first came here. It indicated your strengths, weaknesses and ideas. From this assessment, we were able to determine the correct path upon which you should walk. I was approached by those who thought I would make the most suitable teacher, and I gladly accepted the opportunity to help. Everyone has a pattern of life. It is an imprint of every thought and emotion the soul has experienced, not only in one lifetime, but many. Some would argue it is the blueprint of the character, others would refer to it as the Akashic Records. Both would be right. I like to think of it as the Book of Judgment because that is exactly what it is, our own book of life. We the authors write a play within the book, and we the players put on the correct mask to suit every experience throughout each lifetime. This is why the law of God is perfect, because He allows us to be our own judges, jurors and executioners. We cannot escape from ourselves because we are the law made manifest. I would like you to think back to when we first met. I took you for new clothes and onto the pool where you bathed. I spoke about the cars on Earth requiring a battery. We compared them with astral bodies and said both utilized batteries for motion. Chan had a wonderful memory. It took me a while to think back to that period of my life, but with Chan's prompting I recalled the lesson. "Good, you do remember," he said. "The physical body also requires a battery. In each case the battery not only holds a charge but also leaks a charge into the ether which creates a magnetic field around the vehicle. This field of radiation is called the aura. The human and astral auras are much more complex than others because they are always in a state of constant flux. At times the aura can be seen around the human body as a cloud of electrons that shimmers from head to foot. Its density increases and decreases with the mood of the individual. Jim, I know these words are new to you. In time you will be taught their meaning and significance. Every material thing on the earth has a field of radiation around it, but man is the most complicated. By acting on the mental atoms, his conscious thought creates a pattern within the field. This is the part of the aura seen by those on the earth who have developed their sixth sense. However, there are two other more refined vibrations. They are the mental and the spiritual. Both are affected by the finer ethers and, of course, are affected by the person's mentality. Within these fields, large pulsating colors change from moment to moment. From his birth into the physical world, man builds his character. The sentient atoms pulsate with his thoughts and are the bricks and mortar of his structure. The tones and consequently the colors of the human aura are irrefutable manifestations of what the self makes or molds from the opportunities in his earth life. They indicate his physical, mental and spiritual states. Thus the tone and color of the aura reflect the man himself. Chan's talk was interesting, so I asked if he would explain more about the colors of the human aura. There are seven major colors which form the aura, he said. Each has its own vibration, and each is influenced by the thinker. I will give an example. You have heard of someone seeing red after an outburst of anger. If you look at his aura immediately afterwards, you will notice large pulsing shades of fiery red which reflect his mood. This is the first color of the human constitution. What are the other six major colors, Jim? Chan caught me on the hop because I could not remember what I had been taught at school about colors. Never mind, he said, I will remind you. We were there for some time while Chan explained the rest of the colors. He asked me to repeat the sequence of the colors so I would not forget them. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo and violet, I said smilingly. Very good, he replied, they are the seven major colors. But I must explain that there are seven subdivisions of each. The possible combinations of color hues that make up the aura are countless. You may have noticed from what I have said, there is a threefold aura which relates to the threefold human constitution. These three parts are the physical body, the soul, and the spirit. The physical body is connected more to the etheric vibrations, the soul expresses more on the astral, and the spirit more on the higher mental. You must keep in mind that while someone may hide his thoughts from those on earth, it is impossible to lie and cheat here because one's thoughts determine which plane one goes to after physical death. Like will attract like. There is an appropriate saying that you might have heard, as you think, so you become. These words have a great meaning in life. Are there any questions you would like to ask? I answered that I had none. Good, now I will show you how to clean your aura without taking a bath. I jumped up from the chair and asked, does this mean I will not be able to swim in the pool? Of course not, he replied. Cleansing the aura by thought is necessary, whereas swimming is a recreation. It is a foregone conclusion that thought is quicker than swimming about flapping your arms. Chan saw the funny side of what he had said, and we burst out laughing. When we had finished, he continued to tell me about cleansing my aura. Now that you are standing, he said, we can start. It would be best to close your eyes, then hold your hands out, palms upwards. Now think of a white light entering your forehead and flowing through your body, then bring it out through the palms of your hands. You must use your willpower to operate your thought. Now try it. I tried several times before I felt the full force of the energy flowing through me. It had quite an unusual effect. I became very light-headed and was left in a rather heightened mood. When I commented upon it, Chan replied, "The feeling you are now experiencing is due to your cleansing the aura of all negative thoughts. It is a good indication. Any new feeling of negativity must be cleansed so that you always feel as you do now. It only takes a moment, and of course willpower." Chan stopped talking, and sat there with a smile on his face. Are you all right? I asked. Chan took his time in answering. I was just reflecting back to when I first came here, so long ago now.